Back in 1980, 70% of clothing worn by Americans was made by Americans. Today, it's 2%. And the reason is simple. It's cheaper to make things overseas. But that doesn't change the fact that 2% of textile manufacturers have refused to give up on this country. And those companies deserve to be congratulated. I'm talking about companies like American Giant. American Giant controls every link in their supply chain, and that matters because when you buy from American Giant, you create jobs for people in factory towns all across this country. Look, I get it. Nobody wants a lecture. But if you want to see more companies make more things in this country, you got to support the companies who are already doing that very thing. This holiday, check out the clothing at American-Giant.com. Flannels, hoodies, t-shirts, and jeans made to last a lifetime. Support the 2% who are still making it here at American-Giant.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to talk about the defense in that divisional round loss to Buffalo. Obviously, not our favorite show to do, but we have a very fair and honest person joining us. He's also a hell of a football analyst, and that's Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Not the best feeling today, but you know, with the rest of Ravens flock right now, just kind of looking to sort through this and like figure out what we can from it and have a, like you said, have an honest discussion and pick things up and, look forward to the next season.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. The end of the season always comes very abruptly. It was feared going into this game. You know, this is a coin flip of a game going, 1 point favorite, 1 point dog at one point, but the end is always abrupt. And if you don't win the Super Bowl, you're always unhappy. The Ravens are additionally unhappy and perhaps reasonably so, because these were two of the greatest Ravens teams of all time the last 2 years that had absolutely all the pieces in place to win it all.
Yeah. I mean, it's just hard to kind of wrap the head around having all the opportunity, having, like you said, two of the best, Ravens teams, two of the best, overall performing teams in the history of many, advanced analytics.
Yep.
And seeing them fall short, seemingly to the kind of the same reasons, it's not being able to make the key plays and the key moments that matter. I mean, we could talk all day about turnovers and it's kind of reductive to just point at that, but it's a big deal. Two straight playoff games that you've lost minus six turnover differential on them. You can go back to all the losses that the Ravens have had in the Lamar Jackson era. It's the same story.
Right.
So it
certainly is. I mean, we can talk our way through some of the blame game stuff, but I want to talk about one other thing before we hit on that, is that this is definitely a season where the, one or two games during the season, either one of the Browns Raiders, but certainly both, winning both of those games would have made the difference of getting the extra home playoff game, which is just freaking enormous. And particularly when you consider going up and playing in that slop in Buffalo, for good reasons, largely because probably they have to practice in it. Buffalo is prepared to play in that mess and the Ravens really aren't. And despite the fact that the Ravens really had their way offensively with the Bills in this game and had their way defensively with the Bills, honestly, Bills were effective running the football. We'll talk about that a little bit. They certainly weren't effective passing the football. And I don't know how you practice to play in it. I mean, you want to set up a slip and slide and injure your star offensive lineman, you know, to practice on the stuff? Because I think a lot of what happened, at least that I saw, was that the defensive line in particular was unable to deal with any kind of combination blocking, largely because they just could not keep their footing.
Right.
And that was a big problem towards opening holes. And then they got their linemen advanced properly, like chess pawns into level two, and making those front end of the combination blocks, if you want to call them, or the back end, depending on how you want to look at it. But the level two block that starts off as a combination at the line of scrimmage, they made those effectively, and they caught Roquan consistently with those, and they caught other players as well. Just obviously a frustrating play in terms of the run game, and that's a game where they give up 4.4 yards per rush. You know, you're furious over it, but just a little bit not Ravens-like in 2024.
Yeah, and like you said, the Bills, they had a clear advantage in how they knew how to kind of play in those conditions. They had a game plan that was designed to not expose themselves and limit mm-hmm. risk, and try to, and honestly, they did a lot of what they did throughout the entire season. You know, they actually are a very effective run heavy, run first team in a lot of ways, and that's how they find their success. When they have to, you know, lean more on Josh Allen, it was Josh Allen running the ball. It was him picking up key conversions on third down, picking up, you know, key conversions on fourth down, red zone, goal line. It was all, that's where Josh Allen's value really showed up in this game, and that's how they knew that they could lean into that. You know, I mean, we don't have to talk about this here, but the fact that the Ravens didn't run Lamar at all in this game, aside from scrambles, was kind of like shocking to me, that they didn't even use a single design run in this entire game.
Oh, I think they had one anyway. It was like a straight QB draw, but whatever. It wasn't.
I think there was. There was one, and I think it didn't go anywhere. but there's no option plays with him. There was no like the first drive in the Steelers game, that was all it was. You know, they came out and they mm-hmm. ran with Lamar. And like, yes, I mean, the Ravens ended up putting together a great first drive. They scored a touchdown. So it can't like say it didn't work out for them necessarily. And they had a great offensive performance overall, but it was a lot more downfield passing. That opens you up to the potential, you know, issues, which we saw. You know, there's more risk there.
I would agree there is more risk. I still think I don't think there's anything about run pass balance that wasn't pretty damn good about the Ravens in this game based on what they normally do. I mean, they ran the ball 30 times, they passed it 27, and that's taking out the kneel. Okay. And first of all, an NFL team that can do that and still be effective offensively, and the Ravens got 7.3 yards per offensive play. They ran the ball well, they passed the ball well, they did everything well except for the turnovers, which is like saying, except for this giant turd, you know, everything is fine kind of thing here. But it's that's all it was, basically, was the turnovers were the mistakes. They didn't really have a penalty that cost them, except for the one on defense that was just an awful call. And there were missing penalties that were really, really bad, like the Lamar Jackson out of bounds yep. hit, I thought was absurd. I don't know what Josh Allen is doing right now, but I can't believe he's going to be popular with officials doing what he's doing right now, asking for a flag basically almost every play. He's pointing at somebody, asking for a flag almost every freaking play. I know he sees some success from Mahomes in this, but I just can't believe that's going to be a winning strategy.
Yeah, especially after all of the kind of the blowback on Mahomes after his performance Saturday against Houston, where, you know, he got a couple of kind of ticky-tack penalties and tried to draw another one, which they didn't throw the flag on. Clearly, there's a lot of ire in like the national media and fan base that sees that as like poor sportsmanship at best. But Josh Allen is one of the worst at it. Like, he does that all the time. There's like a reel out there of watching him flop when he gets yep. like touched. I mean, it's an issue in NFL officiating, and it's and you can't always blame them, because you see giant person running at quarterback very fast and you see him go flying and automatically it's a flag, right? It's hard to actually make that ability to catch whether or not it was a real hit or not in that split second. That's why it should be reviewable. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, that would be good. And I think that would work in the Ravens' favor. They would understand what they needed to do much more with roughing the passer penalty, say, if all of them were reviewable. But it's not going to provide. I mean, we've done this with pass interference before. I don't believe it's the panacea, because I don't believe they're going to be willing to change calls. And so, you know, when the pass interference was not, you know, they just weren't willing to change those calls. Nope. That's beyond the standard of reviewable here. It's, you know, the official call, the original call stands. If that's just going to be the answer every time, then, you know, you don't have anything at all.
While we're on the penalty topic real quick, I also wanted to mention the non-penalty that was an intentional grounding, which I thought should have been called. Uh-huh. On the Nate Wiggins blitz.
Yep.
Where the ball didn't get back to the line of scrimmage. They called Curtis Samuel, a receiver in the area. He was 10 yards downfield from where the ball landed.
There was a closer receiver.
There was a running back too. It was Johnson, but he was pretty far from it as well. And it was, it's a judgment call, right? But like, and he was throwing it in the direction of receivers, but there really wasn't anybody really at all close to it. And if you don't get the ball back to the line of scrimmage, and you're calling, and they said over the intercom or over the PA that it was the number one who was the eligible receiver, and that was Curtis Samuel, and he was
much
8 yards past the line of scrimmage. Yeah. There's no way that should not have been called intentional grounding, and that's a 15 yard difference in field position there.
It was 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage where?
Yeah,
where the
ball was pretty far behind it. Yeah, because he didn't even get the ball back to the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was like 5 yards short. So that's just another instance.
You can't see the depth on the field that well, but it looked to me like Johnson was 5 yards further upfield, almost exactly, and an indeterminate amount horizontally, because that's on the field, because that's the part that's hard to see. But I'd have guessed it was about 8 yards horizontally he was away. Yeah. That's honestly too far, and they really should have thrown the flag. I agree with you. Frustrating day, but honestly, the call on Tre'Davious White was worse probably relative to what I've seen. It was just that was so bad in terms of at worst a mutual situation, which Steratore was trying to reframe it as. But honestly, I don't think Steratore really wants to say the official's wrong. You know, that's clearly pass interference, even though he'll say it when they make no call. It's like you're changing it to in the other direction to say you called it on him. It was actually on the defense kind of thing.
I mean, I honestly, like, I was at a bar full of Ravens fans in Los Angeles, and most of the bar thought it was going to be offensive pass interference based on the way
and they were cheering. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not only was the contact initiated by the receiver, he clearly pushed White down forcibly.
Both hands.
Forcibly.
Too.
Both hands.
Yeah.
And somehow he got called for the defensive pass interference. Made no sense. Made no sense at all. And that was 7 points.
So let's go through all the people we've heard blamed today for this Ravens loss, because people are angry and they want to blame something on everybody. There's obviously some talk about EDC and who you blame for the thing. Don't even go into that, because it's you know, it's just this Ravens team stands on its own as far as being a great team these last 2 years. I think it's beyond the pale to really blame EDC for this game. If you want to, you know, take an attitude that there's a big receiver or somebody or a big pass rusher they should have come up with. I mean, show me how it would have been better, because the Ravens had great receivers. They had a great pass rush the entire year, finishing second in the NFL in sacks. I mean, it's not where the Ravens pass rush comes from. Ravens pass rush comes from the inside to morph the pocket and get those great one-on-one opportunities. So I don't put any stock in that. But then coaching is obviously the one that most people would point to in this game. That the most, not necessarily the majority, but a plurality of people would point to.
I think people point to coaching because this has been a recurring theme for the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where we've seen it over and over and over again, where they get this close and then can't win in the big game. So the buck stops at some point. The players change, you know, for the most part. There's been a lot of personnel changes. And I think the idea from that perspective is, you know, coaching, they're responsible for getting these players ready, putting them in the right mindset, getting them focused, whatever that may be. I don't think in this case it was anything about play calling. I can't pick a nit, maybe a couple of things I would have done offensively a little bit differently and situationally, but for the most part, I thought a great game plan pretty much on both sides of the ball. I think defensively, we'll talk more about it later, there might have been some adjustments that could have been made earlier in the game to try and take away the run a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I thought the plan was sound. I thought the effort was there. The execution was there, especially on defense. How you can't really place blame at the coaches for turnovers and lack of turnovers on defense. Like, that's just the way the plays are playing. Right. The players are playing. It's, and to me, like, you have to look at the players who don't execute in this, in these types of games. When you lose a turnover differential by three, that's on the players.
Yeah. It's very hard to blame something like that on the coach. And, you know, it wasn't anything about run pass balance, as we talked about. I think I had two very minor gripes. Okay. And I have one of them. I have no idea what the Ravens actually did, but you're going to have to play in some slop conditions. You can't simulate the field and the footing, but you need to really work with people who understand exactly what spikes the people are going to need in Buffalo. Work with teams that have played against Buffalo. Harbaugh's got plenty of friends around the league. He can call somebody, ex-coach or whatever, from another team and just say, hey, what did you guys use on the defensive line when you had that snow game in 22 there, whatever it might have been? And they'll tell them. I mean, they'll say, yeah, we got to go with the 3-inch spikes or whatever it is, and you'll be fine. They'll be a little less comfortable and blah blah blah. So that's one possibility. Number two is you can't really simulate the field, as we said earlier, but you can simulate maybe what a wet and icy ball would feel like. Now, one of the things is that, you know, the Ravens play with their own balls offensively. And that sounds kind of funny when I say it, but they have a bag of balls, like, just from the Tom Brady area we learned during Deflategate, that theirs are inflated to the PSI level that's chosen by the Ravens. And they come out of a bag and are put in the game. And, you know, I assume that means those bags, you know, those balls are about as dry and as playable as they can be. I know there's an official standing over the ball at all times trying to keep that ball, you know, as good as it could be. But you can also, if it's getting wet and heavy on a long drive, and you know, you can try to simulate that by icing balls that start at your preferred PSI, and then tossing them around and just seeing how is this different. You don't even have to do any kind of really high tech drill. What you want to do is just have a normal, like, passing, drop the ball in the bucket drill and see how difficult it is to catch that ball. Get them used to that. I don't know what they did with that. You know, we heard when Peyton Manning played the Ravens in the Mile High Miracle game, they were talking about how he'd stuck his arm in a bucket of ice because he didn't want to play with a glove and started trying to throw after that. Obviously, that didn't work for him in that game. They ended up losing. He ended up having not that great a game, and obviously two interceptions were huge. But it'd be a minor gripe at best. And I don't know what they actually did. They may have actually tried that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know if you saw this or not. It was a tweet from a national beat person who had an interview with Bills coaches, and they basically said that in their preparation, they obviously watched all the Ravens film, and they said the Ravens are a really, really good team. The one area that they have some issues is in the ball handling, which speaks directly to what you're talking about. And we have seen some fumbles this year. We've seen them from different players. Lamar, you know, Derrick Henry had that fumble against the Steelers, and it came out in this game exactly like that. There have been some shaky snaps. There have been some over the years, we've seen a lot of kind of like mesh point issues that wasn't so much the case this year, but just some of the timing on some of those plays, on when the snap happens. I mean, it hurt them back in 2020 when they had the snap that went over Lamar's head and ended up knocking him out of the game when he had a concussion. Like, those kind of plays have haunted the Ravens throughout the years. And it came back again in this game.
So you could point to coaching that as saying that has to be a greater coaching focus. It may also be a trade-off in terms of being a team that is not sure where they want to put the ball and wants to have the option of where the ball is going. That if you're going to go into the mesh and use the read option, you're going to have a risk of higher fumbles, just like any team that passes more. The Ravens have greatly reduced interception risk with the way they play football. They don't, you know, they have Lamar Jackson, who's an accurate passer, doesn't risk the ball much, you know, obviously coming off a game where he had an interception, But also, you know, they don't throw the ball as much as other teams. So they you know, because they run the game out so often and are so often ahead of other teams, that really hasn't been an issue. You know, you can't avoid all elements of risk, which I'm sure we'll get back to in terms of the 2-point conversion at some point in this one too.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I said, if we're looking at blame, it's really coming down to the turnovers and mm-hmm. you know the players who are involved in those, especially late in the game with turnover and the drops from Mark Andrews. It's just a brutal sequence. If you can't win games when you make those mistakes, right. I mean, the Ravens were in this game even with 3 turnovers, but that, you know, that one play that had to be made at the end of the game wasn't made, so that's a loss, mm-hmm. and that's all it came down to.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the 2-point conversion, because that is something that I saw a lot of highly misplaced negativity on in terms of the decisions to go for 2 in both those situations. I have some very strong opinions on this, but I'd rather you say it first.
To me, you always want to take the points, or not take the points, like take the opportunity to get the 2 points, like especially when you're down 8. You can make that a tie game.
Or down 2 when you're making the choice to go for 2.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you want to, I mean, yes, they were down 2 later because they were down 2 earlier and they didn't convert. So like, if you just go for it there, then maybe you don't have it. But it takes the perfect sequence of events happening with 2 field goals in order to make it an 8-point game again. So like, it's unlikely to be in this exact environment when you have the opportunity to tie the game by a 2-point conversion that you should be pretty good at doing, you take it. They had 2 great plays. They had wide open receivers.
Yeah.
They just weren't able to come down with it. And that's just, you know, the variance of football. I absolutely agree with the going for it both times. Like, I mean, you had to at the end of the game. The first time, I completely agree with it.
Right. I think mathematically, like going for it when you're 2 down for 2 is the most defensible mathematically, period. And there's a good link out there. Basically, I posted it on RSR, but it basically has all of the possible -1, -2, -3 situations and how much win probability gain. It's originally came from a 538 article. And basically, if the thing looks at what is your gain if you have a 40% chance of making it all the way up to a 55% chance. And anything, by the way, out of those bounds, first of all, is probably garbage in, garbage out for your model. Because even if you can say, well, they made only 2 of the last 9, there's still a pretty good chance you can make 2 of the last 9 if you've got a 40% or 45% chance to make each one. There's no reason that I can think of why Lamar Jackson, given who he is as an athlete, and the Ravens' other weapons they have in terms of tight ends, in terms of, you know, having a good offensive coordinator who's creative in this kind of situation, shouldn't be better than a 40% level. It shouldn't be better than a league average to start that, which is almost 50%. So I don't get it. But anyway, even if your chance was 40%, you have ridiculously better outcomes by going for it anytime in the second half. And even in the first half, you probably have better outcomes if you're in the low 40s. It infuriates me. Everybody talks, well, look, if you just gone for 1, then you just went for that second one. Well, think about the payoff also, because you're working off the result if you're saying they could have just gone for 1 twice. But the payoff would have been if they make the 2 the first time, they tie it, the Bills kick 2 field goals, the Ravens score again. If you want to play the same game situation, and maybe the Bills would have not played it the same way. Maybe it would have forced the Bills' decision to go for it on 4th and 2 from the, you know, near the goal line. But the Ravens would have been kicking to take the lead instead of the payoff is much higher. Ravens were kicking to tie the freaking ball game. That's 0.5 of a win. Taking the lead is needless to say, a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the analytics would even point you to go for 2 when you're down like 2 scores, like when you're down 14 and you sure. make the first touchdown, going for 2 there is the better option, because then you, like, for the same reason, you have the chance to win on your next touchdown or tie with another 2-point conversion if you missed it. Right.
That's it's like the most basic mathematical model, the one you said. 38.2% is the break-even probability of making that two-point conversion you need in exactly the situation you mentioned. Is actually, if I'm looking at a two-point conversion chart, I look for 0.38 in that exact square to validate the chart from my perspective. Otherwise, it's, you know, I can't trust it. It's developed some other way that I'll need further vetting of their methodology for.
But I think you always give Lamar Jackson that chance to score from the two-yard line.
Yeah.
So theoretically, you should be going for the 2 points with Lamar majority of your scores.
Yeah, I mean, that could well be something the Ravens investigate. I have heard it said that you don't have an unlimited number of two-point trick plays or whatever, but develop 12. You know, it's and have them be run out of different looks, and I think it'd be hard for other teams to keep along with that. I did have a minor gripe, and this is coaching. I think some of this is on Lamar, honestly, is that the Ravens did not manage the clock very well down the stretch. I thought they should have tried to score in the last 30 seconds and not with a minute and a half left or whatever it was, minute 40 might have been, something like that. And, you know, the Buffalo had two timeouts. They probably needed to call a couple of run plays in there. They were effective at it. I don't think it would have stalled the drive to do so. And I think you force the Bills to call their timeout. And if you're going to try and if your only option at that point is to tie the game, I'd have tried to tie it slower.
I agree with you. I think that's the ideal situation there. But then on the other flip of the coin, I mean, please lead up to that in different ways. I think you were moving the ball well. You probably could have run the ball there, but Lamar he had a great drive. He made a lot of clutch plays, including the touchdown. And that was a third and long play, I think.
No, it was first down, I think, actually. But
was it?
Check.
Right, I think it was third and long.
No, they just had a big completion to Likely or something, I think, on the previous play. Let me check it. Please go ahead with your point, though.
No. If I was thinking that was a long position.
So Andrews caught a 19-yard play, and I think Andrews actually ran out of bounds on that play. I'm literally in the stand screaming, stay the in bounds, you know, kind of thing. Hill also ran out of bounds on that drive. Let's see. Yeah, he's pushed out of bounds, it says, but he could have slid down or whatever, 25-yard line instead of the 24 maybe. That was definitely a situation where it's worth sacrificing a yard or two for time. And then the other one was on the Hill. It was on the previous ball on first and 10. Hill ran out of bounds after a 4-yard gain.
Yeah.
All right. I can understand maybe wanting to get the last little bit of yardage on that. I still don't really like it. I want him to stay in bounds. I also want him to try and cut back in bounds if you can, because there may be more yards available. You kick two more yards maybe and keep the clock running, which is win-win. If you're willing to make that choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think in that situation, ideally, you don't want to leave the other team anytime. Like, that's the ideal scenario. I guess the other flip of the coin is if the two-point conversion doesn't convert, then you have a little bit more time. But there wasn't really enough time to work with that scenario regardless. So
They didn't have the timeouts for that,
Gabe.
So they had to still kick onside, and it would have been a losing proposition. If they had all three timeouts, I'd agree with you that they should be not trying to stop the clock, conserving all three timeouts, and it just worked. But they weren't in the superior position. They were one shoulder blade on the mat at that point.
Yeah.
All right. How about Lamar as a point of blame in this game?
I mean, I think he has to shoulder some of the blame. Two really poor turnovers in the first half. You know, the first one, the interception. That might be some blame on Bateman. It's hard to know exactly their rules in terms of how they read coverages. Clearly they weren't on the same page. I think if Bateman, you know, kind of runs the corner route instead of the out, then, you know, he has a chance to not only, you know, make a long completion, but it's almost certainly not an interception. So it's hard to say who exactly that's on. The fumble, I think, is the more critical one. You know, we've seen Lamar make plays out of, you know, bad plays all season. So you kind of just have to take that for what it is and say this is how we kind of like got here. This is who Lamar is. He's going to try and make the best of it every single time. But in the playoffs, in a tie game, you're driving, you have to be careful with the ball. I mean, he didn't even get hit. I mean, he was in the grabs, but he dropped the ball. Like it wasn't even knocked out. So it's just this unfortunate situation. I think, yes, I don't know like what percentage of the pie goes to that, but on the flip side of it, he played an incredible game outside of those two plays. Right. So they wouldn't have had a chance without him, obviously. I mean, he's the MVP. So it is what it is. You take some of the bad with a lot more of the good.
That's where I am on that. And I thought, you know, if you're really assigning the blame for the fumble, a fair amount has to go to Linderbaum on that play. And I have to decide, we haven't done the offensive line scoring yet. That'll come tomorrow night. But I have to decide how much of a sack Linderbaum gets on that play. But that's a recurring theme with Ravens centers in general. I don't want to pick on Linderbaum, period. But it has been a problem for him in his career. It was a problem for McCary, obviously. I think he was the one who had the previous one in Buffalo, if I recall correctly. It would have been in 20.
Yeah. Skura was hurt that year, right?
Skura was, I think his last season with the Ravens might have been 2019.
Or is that 19?
Yeah, but who would have been at center then in 20? Like Bozeman or somebody like that. And then I'm not even 100% sure. I'd have to look back. It's been a lot that of blocked centers. Out.
Been a lot of rotation at that position until Linderbaum came in.
But anyway, I'm with you. And if you look at how Lamar played in this game, I mean, the Ravens converted 7 out of 10 times on third down, 1 out of 1 times on fourth down, 8.9 yards per pass play, 7.3 yards per play overall. I mean, they moved the ball effortlessly on offense with the exception of that play. They overcame a number of other errors. And what's the big one I'm thinking of? There was an error that set them back 10 yards or more, maybe more. And they made up for it. Oh, no, I'll tell you what it was. Henry dropping the ball. I mean, Henry had probably a 25-yard play on that first drive where he's open the left side. He drops the football, and Lamar said no problem, threw a 39-yard pass to Likely on the very next throw.
Yeah.
So it's there was certainly a lot of pickup by Lamar of his teammates in this one.
And that's been a theme the entire year. You know, they've gone behind the sticks on offensive line penalties.
Great point.
You know, other mistakes here and there, and Lamar has been able to, you know, make up for it because of how incredible of a player he is. And you know, this game is just kind of like basically almost entirely getting to that pinnacle and then just falling short. I mean, if you have less of those mistakes along the way, you don't necessarily have to overcome so much and you're in a better position. But just to see the ability to come back in a game where they were down a lot and it was feeling pretty uncomfortable, especially at halftime, giving the ball back to the Bills, to be able to get a stop there, come back, score, you know, it's credit to them for not giving up in this game, which a lot of teams could have.
Any blame for the defense in this game?
I mean, aside from the one really long completion over the top to Brandon Stevens, who I just he definitely wasn't on the field as much in this game. I wish that they could have made that adjustment earlier, but he was just the target the entire season. He was targeting this game when he was out there. It's hard to have too much of a gripe though. I thought they were pretty good overall. The run defense in a few areas was lackluster, especially in the first half. And that led to some scoring drives, but overall, I think the defense played very well.
Yeah, I thought so too. And even when the Bills went heavy, they were good. They weren't unstoppable. And that was something that they did a lot during this game. I mean, they had 13 snaps a heavy and they ran the ball pretty effectively out of it. But I have some more data on that to share later. We'll get to it anyway. I don't really have anything to blame on the defense, but you've got the right guy there. If you're talking about Brandon Stevens, I think I've heard a lot of people blaming Roquan Smith, and there certainly are times where he was picked up in what was going on, but the problem wasn't really Roquan. I thought it was more field conditions, not allowing the, interior defensive linemen to absorb double teams. Well, And that meant we constantly are seeing Spencer Brown, number 79, and, you know, even the center, Connor McGovern, getting up to level two, and Edwards and Osiris, I always want to call him that. Yeah, that's it. Osiris, right? Osiris Jones? The right guard.
I might be right.
No, Osiris Torrance. I mean, I've got to get this right. Now I'm driving myself nuts with this. Osiris Torrance, the right guard. So those guys got up to level two a lot, and they made very effective blocks. And if you look at it, it's double teams on Brandon Williams, even on Michael Pierce, who I thought had a pretty good game, and others in the interior line, Matt Abike, that are really allowing a lot of that to happen. The Bills just were very efficient at doing that. And I think they did use field conditions to their advantage in that. And still, when you look at the...
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel. An official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them.
Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At the how the game played out, they didn't move the ball very well offensively in this game. The Ravens gave them short fields and they scored some touchdowns. Best field position the Ravens had was their own 36. And the Bills had a 40-yard drive for a touchdown. And they started one at the 24-yard line. That was, and they started another at the 47-yard line at the end of game. That was just after the onside kick. But the 24-yard line was the big one that went for the touchdown. Otherwise, they started at their own 43 and their own 46. And so they had some better opportunities. But they had, generally speaking, you know, at least one more short field, however you want to call it.
But the Ravens on defense, they, I mean, the yards per play was good. It wasn't amazing, but 4.6. I was saying,
You win. That's a winning total.
Yeah. I mean, the Ravens more than 2.5 more yards per play than the Bills. Mm-hmm. And the penalty, I mean, the penalty hurt. That was a key one. You know, the one penalty we talked about that really hurt on a third down conversion. But even with that, it was still, I think, a game where the Ravens were doing everything they could to give the team a chance on the defensive side, and then the offense, you know, came back and took advantage of the defensive play that they had. I mean, making that stop at the end of the game at the goal line stand. I mean, that was a huge sequence play of events. And they had trouble there earlier in the game, and they were able to make that play on third down when they had to. So, you know, that was very, very impressive, just to allow the team to have an opportunity there to come back and tie it.
Okay, how about, let's move on, because I think we've pretty much satisfied ourselves that the defense is not a unit that you would assign too much blame to. If any blame goes with the fact that they didn't generate turnovers, or was it so central to what the Bills were trying to do that the chance of a turnover was very low at any time?
I mean, the only thing you could look at is, you know, the kind of conservative pass rush, I think. Mm-hmm. But in the conditions, you know, it's hard really to kind of do a lot. Especially up front, you're not having great footing. I think you wanted to kind of keep Allen in the pocket as much as you could, because mm-hmm. he can, you know, hurt you with his legs. And they really, like, they avoided the big play. That's a huge thing when you're making them kind of execute time and time again. And if it wasn't for, you know, some of these, like you said, short field penalty, like turnovers, like given all those things, I think that they really came up really strong, and turnovers are a lot of ways fluky. It's hard to force turnovers. Often they're made by the offense. Mistakes are made by the offense more so than turnovers are forced by the defense the majority of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Derrick Henry is someone that I think a lot of people are not going to blame, because he ran the ball effectively, but he had a big drop. He had another play. PFF is calling a drop. It didn't really matter, because it was third and goal on 8-yard line or something. Threw it to about the 5. He dropped the ball, but there's already 3 Bills right on top of him. We're gonna make the tackle. It wasn't gonna go for a touchdown. They're gonna have to kick the field goal anyway. I don't really even consider that a drop. But you know, the other thing you could blame Henry for is he had an ineffective run as they were trying to get it in from the 2-yard line after that big Bateman reception, where it led to just a field goal.
Yeah, not getting a touchdown there was pretty bad. Yep. That was a huge opportunity missed. I felt in the moment that was probably more damaging not scoring a touchdown there than either of the turnovers in the first half. Right. Just because you got so close. I feel like the sequencing of the plays there could have been better. You probably could have gone play action on first down, then maybe run. But It is what it is. When you lose yardage, though, that is going to really hurt your chances when you're that close. And they just didn't seem to have the right plays available to them after, you know, getting pushed back twice. Right. So it's just that, I think that was a little bit where I had an issue with the sequencing of play calling from Monken more than anywhere else in the game.
All right. All right. And then Andrews, of course, would be the last person that I think pretty much everyone is saying at least deserves a share of the blame here. Very tough day for him. They had a drop on a crosser, the fumble, the drop 2-point conversion. He did convert 2 sneaks for the Ravens, which is a big under, you know, missed point of the thing. But Josh Allen, you know, wants the MVP in exchange for his converted sneaks. All I'll say is, poor guy has to live with this for at least the next 12 months. And it could be a life sentence, not just 12 months. Because if the Ravens, you know, move on from him this offseason, which I think is a possibility, you know, they have a lot of cap issues. They're gonna have to then you know, he basically has to live with the fact that he could never make the Super Bowl with Baltimore. He may not make the Super Bowl with whoever he ends up with.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they end up doing. There are going to have to be cap considerations, and he has one of the bigger numbers. Mm-hmm. And you have a younger, potentially better player and likely that you might want to give that money to moving forward. So personally, I think Andrews shares the largest pie blame in this game. The fumble, especially, I think was egregious. Just complete lack of presence of what was going on around him. He did a weird turnaround where he kind of moved in the wrong direction. He thought he sensed a defender coming from one way and he wasn't there. It was actually the other direction and got turned around. And I think he just kind of panicked in that moment. And then the drop 2-point conversion, that's a play. He'll tell you every single time he has to make that. You know, every NFL player will tell you you have to make that play. Was it a perfect pass? No. It's you don't often have perfect passes in contested plays like that. And that's the difference in the game, frankly. I mean, those two plays were really what set the Ravens back in this one.
Right.
So it's hard to put all blame on one person. Obviously, there's other people who are involved, but that's kind of like the key plays that absolutely kind of sealed the fate of this game, unfortunately.
Right. He made key catches in the rest of the game. He had five other, you know, catches that were significant yardage. I think he had 61 yards receiving in the game. He had the 19-yard play right before the touchdown to Likely. That was a important play on that final drive. But anyway, this is a tough situation for Andrews. And it does really point out that you can give a little bit to Lamar. You can give some things to maybe to Derrick Henry for dropping the ball or for not scoring when he's in closer or not getting the ball. You can maybe give some to the offensive line. And I haven't sat down to watch play by play exactly what's going on the offensive line. So I want to specifically set that aside. But I think what I really come back to is basically that it's the players who have to share in this responsibility for the loss. It makes sense. I mean, you have a great game in terms of all offensive elements. You have a great game in terms of the defense doing a good job against a top offense in the league. And it really does come down to the players, you know, and the three turnovers in this game. It's just very hard to escape that.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches can only do so much. They put them in position to make the plays, and they have to actually make them. And if they don't, then it's why you end up losing the game. And yeah. I don't know what happens next. Some of the players probably won't be here next year. I mean, that's the way it always happens. How much of the roster turns over, we'll see. I mean, it seems like a lot of players, there's probably room to bring a lot of them back, but it's not going to be the same team. There's going to be some probably key players who are going to be missing. And they're going to have to find those contributions elsewhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Patrick McCary, Ronnie Stanley, and Mark Andrews might be at the top of that list in terms of players who are potentially gone. All right. Well, let's talk about some other things from the defense in this game, because we really do want to move on. Although I think the blame game is probably where a lot of people have their interest based on watching Twitter today. That's certainly for true. Allen didn't have a particularly great opportunity set, I'll just say. The Ravens held him to 7 yards below expectation, which isn't an unbelievably great number. But when you think about, there's some offsetting conditions here. Allen's a great quarterback. The conditions were crappy. Yeah. On the other hand, the Ravens had just had a plus 52 game, I think it was, the previous week, which is a big reversal from how they'd been. The secondary had been doing relative to opportunity set in recent weeks. I thought that part of the game was very nice, that they got their house generally in order. And aside from Brandon Stevens, and there's a couple plays with Brandon Stevens. It's the 34-yard play he allowed when he's got the middle third of the field. But and that was as a dime, basically. Mm-hmm. He was in that position. But then the other one was down the left sideline, just as the right corner. They appear to be in cover three, and he's nowhere near where he needs to be to cover. Was it Amari Cooper? Was it overthrown? I don't think it was Coleman. I think it was Cooper on the left sideline. It was overthrown by 5 to 7 yards when he's wide open by Allen. It was one of the very first plays from scrimmage in this game.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact sequence there, but I do remember there being an open receiver and Allen just kind of dismissing. So that was on Stevens too.
It was on Stevens. It was Mac Hollins. It's the open receiver down the left sideline, yeah. number 13. So I just want to correct myself on that. Ravens won the missed tackle battle. They had six missed tackles. The Bills had eight. And that's something that the Ravens need to cause missed tackles in order to win. And that helped them win the run game by a little bit more than they otherwise would have. Percentage-wise, it's a little bit better. Let's talk about coaching changes for start. Do you expect any major coaching change for the Baltimore Ravens, meaning a truly change at the top, and then secondarily a chance that Monken goes elsewhere this offseason?
I don't foresee big changes at the top intentionally by the Ravens. I don't think Zachary Orr is going anywhere. I think he is probably done enough. I thought if you asked me this midway through the season, I would have said Zachary Orr wouldn't be coming back. Mm-hmm. But I think with bringing in Pease, some of the, kind of maybe tutelage mentorship that happened there, some easing him into the comfort of being able to feel comfortable in the role of calling plays, feeling comfortable with moving players around in the starting lineup. Those decisions really turned around the Ravens defensive year. I think he is set up to come back and be even better for it next year. Offensive side of the ball, if Monken goes, that we could see a few changes, obviously one big one, but I feel like a lot of the more senior coaches on the offensive side of the ball are probably going to be sticking in those roles as well. I don't honestly see too much change. If anything, it would be maybe bringing in a couple more people just to have in the building, more like veteran coaches who've been around a long time, because they kind of lost that over the past couple of seasons.
What I'll say, I don't have any problem bringing in any number of coaches, by the way, within reason. I don't want to have a too many cooks situation. Like it could have potentially been if Dean Pease, if he hadn't really meshed with Orr and Orr had the last word on things and whatnot. But here's what I think that they really need to rebuild the stable of young coaches to a greater degree. They need more guys who have excellent succession type tracks in their future, rather than having a bunch of middle-aged, relatively okay at their job, but not headed for greatness. And I'm not sure where T. Martin is in that spectrum, by the way. I'm not sure, but he got passed over for offensive coordinator when Monken was hired. So if he's not your guy, then maybe you need to find another guy. But they have more opportunities to do that on the defensive side of the ball, and they can do it at the position coach level. They could do all sorts of stuff with this. They could do some mentorships on the offensive line in particular. I think they want the next great young offensive line coach. And I don't know if that's Travell Wharton or whatever, but Warhop will not be a guy who's around for a long time because he's older guy. And he could still mentor somebody for another year. Not saying no on that. And the Ravens offensive line, that was one of the elements that came together. I'm not blaming Warhop for what's happened. I'm just saying the Ravens really want to have a long-term successful offensive line coach who wants to coach offensive line as opposed to being an offensive coordinator also.
Yeah, I think offensive line is probably the right place to definitely bring in somebody. I mean, clearly it was a difficult situation this year. I think, with T. Martin, I think he might be the person in line still for offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but I think he was only with the team a year before Roman left. It might have been 2 years, but he wasn't in the building for a very long time. It wasn't like he was a long time assistant coach with the Ravens. I think he was brought in to help out Lamar in mm-hmm. his development. So I could see him now that he's been in the building, I think like 4 years, I think. I see him as someone who could definitely be potential replacement for Monken, because he's been with Lamar for a while, because he's been in the Ravens coaching room for a while now. He's familiar with, what they want to do, the type of offense they're running. So I think if Monken were to leave, he would probably be the person inside the building I would be looking at. But there might be options outside as well that you could bring in. At least I think you do your due diligence and interview. And I do think you probably want to look younger for the most part, if you're looking at offensive coordinators. I don't know who the best options are anymore, because all the best young minds are being snapped up already. It's an unfortunate thing about when you're successful. In
the you're saying field. For offensive coordinator as opposed to a position coach? I'm kind of agnostic to age and an offensive coordinator.
Well, I think you want somebody who has some either high, good amount of experience in a very successful offense that's been proven and has, you know, he shows that he has the ability to kind of come in and kind of run that type of scheme. You know, similar to like what a, I mean, obviously you'd want to have like the next Ben Johnson, but somebody right. who's younger, who's kind of like up and coming, maybe in like a Shanahan type scheme or something like that. And give them that opportunity to be a play caller.
It's interesting. You mentioned like a Shanahan scheme because what's been great about the Ravens offense under Monken is they've been able to meld, you know, what Roman had that was good with what Monken brought that was different and very effectively. And I think there would be something to be gained from that. And if they lost Monken, that would be one of the residual benefits of it, is that you get yet another layer of organizational DNA. And I think, you know, through Harbaugh and through some of the other coaches that will remain, I think you keep a lot of the old layers of the playbook.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part of the success that the Ravens have had the past 2 years, because of maintaining that through line of what they had built with Lamar, with the Greg Roman type plays, with the zone reads, things like that, the run schemes, and then bringing in a more, you know, decisive and thoughtful a passing attack. I mean, that's really what Womacken has done a great job of. And also just, I think just in general, his ability to call plays in the moment, well-designed plays that make sense, given the context of what's happening. That wasn't always the case with Greg Roman, I didn't think.
Right.
So that's, and that's hard to judge, especially if you don't have someone who has a lot of experience play calling. That's where I think you miss out on having someone who's more of a veteran in that area. But sometimes you have to kind of take a chance at trusting somebody.
All right. We're running kind of long on this segment, but I think we hit on some of the topics people really want to hear about. I do want to say a few things just schematically that the Ravens did in this game. The first was that Stevens actually moved to safety in this game on two separate occasions. So Ardarius Washington was missing for a couple plays, had to go into the tent, and they moved him to the back end during that time. So I don't know about you, but I'm always happy to see Stevens moving to the back end to play safety, because I think he's, generally speaking, should be more effective there. And it's not like he doesn't have a background there to some degree, but I think it was more interesting to me that when Humphrey got hurt, the Ravens moved Ardarius Washington to the slot and then moved Stevens to the back end to take over that Ardarius's role on the back end. And you think about it, Hamilton's the guy who came from the slot. Wouldn't you move Stevens to the back end, move Hamilton up to the line of scrimmage, get the extra run defense? And they didn't do that. They went to Ardarius Washington playing slot corner.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think this game we saw that they really liked Tre'Davious White on the outside for the most part. They wanted to give him that opportunity. They felt more comfortable with him there. It is interesting to put Ardarius there, but that is the place he's played in the past.
Yeah,
you know, he's also familiar there. He's played well there. I think it just goes to show the lack of trust in Stevens more than anything else. And they felt like safety is the best place to hide him. And in a lot of ways, I think they were right, even though he still got beat there.
Yeah, they had only five guys to play there. But he got beat at safety after he was.
Well, I guess it depends on how you're calling it. When the play that he was in on the dime package, he was kind of, I guess he was over the slot technically, but he was like off the ball considerably.
Yeah, he's playing weak side linebacker. He's playing dime in that role, so, and they dropped. Yeah.
Yeah. So I consider him more of like in a safety type.
Oh, that's fair.
Responsibility there. So yeah, I think regardless of where he was playing, he was definitely being targeted on the field.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. That's a fair description of that. Okay. Let's see. What else did I want to talk about? Let's check packages. Very simple packages. Base 14 snaps, 5.4 yards per play allowed. 12 runs for 64. Primarily, that was against heavy personnel. So they put a sixth offensive lineman on the field. They ran the ball pretty effectively. They ran it 11 times. I got it right here. So 13 heavies. They ran it 11 times for 5.3. Let's try. Check that. They ran it 12 times for 64. So 5.3 yards per play. And they passed it twice for 12. So 6.0 yards per play, obviously, on that. So the running success that the Bills had, a lot of it came when they went heavy. And it was very effective on these field conditions in terms of getting them the double teams they wanted. The Ravens obviously go into have an extra defensive lineman on the field and in base packages in these situations. But the other thing about it is that the Ravens, when they go to base, they take a corner off the field. So the Bills didn't really take advantage of that fact. So if you go heavy and you're trying to pass based on, you know, getting one coverage player off the field, and it wasn't like Stevens was the guy who was coming off the field necessarily. Yeah. So it was often Wiggins would be the guy who would be off the field. I mean, then I'm not sure that the Bills really leveraged their opportunity in that case. Leveraged or levered, which is correct in that situation?
I think leveraged.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm kind of thankful that they didn't really go with a more like a play action type approach in those, because I think that could have maybe hurt the Ravens a little bit more. But yep. I mean, we talked about it earlier, the Bills seemed to be pretty content with taking a conservative path, and they thought that they had an advantage running the ball with the jumbo packages, and they kind of did. I think they definitely were able to kind of push the Ravens around a little bit with those packages. And we've already talked about, you know, the footing and the conditions and everything, and the decision to go into heavy personnel is a way of dictating what you want to do. And you know, maybe if the Ravens had committed a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, how aggressively they would defend that, the Bills might have started taking some more aggressive looks downfield. But it's kind of like, if the Ravens aren't going to kind of start, you know, playing heavier and stacking the line of scrimmage to take that away, we're going to keep running it as long as it's working. And sure, it did for a good portion of the game.
Yeah, past Ravens teams have gone to a 4-4-3 in that situation and gone with three defensive backs. The 2005 Ravens, in fact, played 265 snaps during the season with only three defensive backs. So it could have been done. It would have been a kind of a scarier thing to try against a team like the Bills. So I'm glad they did. And I think that they got the best exchange that they could in that situation. I also thought the Ravens, and this is for a topic for the offensive show, got exactly what they wanted in terms of the Bills personnel, exactly what they wanted without having to go super heavy to jumbo offensive alignment. So they did use five OL6s, but when they noticed that Teron Johnson is not on the field versus 12 or 21 personnel, that was exactly what they wanted. And they didn't need to go heavier than that. If you're wondering why they didn't go heavier, because, oh my God, the running game could have been so good. They got exactly what they wanted with the 12 and 21 personnel that they didn't have to do it.
Yeah, and getting back to the Bills side of things and the Ravens defense, often for the majority of this game, the Bills were leading. They don't need to be taking big shots down the field and doing a lot of passing out of those sets. They wanted to take clock. They wanted to run clock. They wanted to grind out drives and you know, just be conservative and keep the lead. And to that extent, it worked for them.
Yeah, and they were successful. You got to look at their run game, and their yards per carry doesn't even tell the whole story, because they had 12 of their 20 first downs were rushing first downs. That's a very effective. That's a lot of rushing first downs for the game. The Ravens happen to have 13, but that's a lot of rushing first downs for one football game. All right, so there's no big nickel in the game. No moving Hamilton up. The Bills were playing a lot heavier. It would have been a time when I thought big nickel would have been effective, but I've had that discussion several times when other teams go big. And the Ravens will this offseason, finding another safety who can play on the back end, and actually probably finding two guys who can play on the back end, maybe one draftee and one cheap free agent, I think is going to be central to their offseason strategy.
Yeah, they definitely whiffed this year with bringing Eddie Jackson as kind of like that veteran back end defender. Obviously, Marcus Williams took a huge drop off. I mean, they do have a couple of young safeties, rookies, you know, Kane and Brady. We'll see if they pan out to be anything. They'll be given an opportunity, I think, but you have to at least bring in one or two more players, I think, to compete
There's nothing from what I saw in the preseason anyway that says a Kane or Braid, either one, is going to be a legitimate back end defender. And yeah, I think they'll get the opportunity, and we'll look again. But unfortunately, I'm not seeing it. And Braid, it was true even at Maryland. Kane never really in his career either at Purdue, I think. Yeah, that had he looked good in that role. So unfortunately, it's a guy neither of those guys do I see on the back end. Both of them could be dime guys though. They could fill that role as if needed. And this year, I didn't even feel like they really gave them a shot at that. They didn't go with the dime late in games like they could have when they're picking up some snaps like that.
Yeah, I feel like it was interesting. They pretty much were just special team contributors. It's on special teams, but we'll see. You know, it might be a learning curve type situation, but definitely want somebody who has more upside.
Yeah. The standard nickel, 37 snaps, 4.1 yards per play, one sack. That was the most effective package that the Ravens had. They controlled the game as they would like to when the Bills went usually with 12 or 11 personnel in that standard nickel. So they were fine defending it with that and did a good job. For the four corner dime, they used for six snaps, 7.8 yards per play. That did include the 34 yard play to Shakir, which was the big whiff by Stevens trying to trail him deep middle. Didn't get the job done. You know, maybe it's a little unfair to just beat on Stevens for that one play. Stevens, he had a nice coverage play that ended a drive, right? Crossing pattern on the right side, reaching across. He did, though, get beat pretty badly on the left sideline early on in the game. And if you gotta be able to hang with receivers, but you gotta also be able to find the football. It's just not one or the other is just not enough. Can't find the football all you want and can't hang with the receiver is just not enough. You're only a cover three safety in that situation. And if you can only trail the guy, you just have tremendous vulnerability to back shoulder and getting beat by receivers who get their hands up late. So Stevens needs to be better. It's unfortunate. He's had a really bad year in a year that probably cost himself millions of dollars over it. The only player who probably cost himself more money. Maybe there are a couple, because Marcus Williams probably cost himself a ton of money with this year, but Deontay Johnson also cost himself a ton of money.
That's a good point. I think Brandon Stevens, absolutely, after last year, I thought he had a breakout season. I think most people saw him as an ascending player. And then, you know, cornerback is one of those positions. It's kind of a high variance position. There's a lot of turn, like kind of like up and down just across the league, and the best corners and often even the best players will have down years. But a lot of it is kind of your confidence, your air in your head. You lit up a few big plays earlier on in the season. It was penalties. And then I feel like he kind of lost some of his confidence and aggressiveness because of that. And it just kind of like snowballed after that. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure he'll sign on somewhere. I don't think it'll be with Baltimore.
I don't think it makes sense in terms of the dollars anyway. I think they have to go cheap at that position. They've got Humphrey and they're paying a lot for him, and they might want to extend him, and he's earned it. And the nice thing about Humphrey is I'm like right now 95% certain he can make a seamless conversion to safety when the time comes. I mean, he just has all those qualities about understanding what's going on the field and being able to see it from the back end. And we've seen great years of punch outs. We've seen now a great year of interceptions. And it just seems to me he's going to be a Rod Woodson type who will be able to make that shift to safety very easily. So I'm at the beginning of the year, I was like, it's Andrews or Humphrey for 2025. And one has to be cut to save enough cap to fuel some extensions that are likely to be handed out. And you know, possibly a contract for Ronnie Stanley. We'll see about that. But I don't think there's any question after this year that Humphrey is definitely staying. And if Andrews stays, I don't think it will be with an extension. I think they'll extend likely. And I still think it's far more likely they'll trade Andrews and get a little bit of value for him. That means a third round pick or whatever it might be. He's had a really good year.
No, he did. I mean, he had a very slow start, and if you take away like the first four or five games of the season, I mean, you look at his numbers over the second half. It was one of the better tight end performances in the league this year. Yeah. He still has the ability to make those plays, you would think he has a great chemistry with Lamar. So for that sense, you'd think ideally you would want to be able to keep him, but at the cost, not that he currently has. I don't think you can do that. I don't know if he's willing to kind of come back on like a moderate extension, lower his, number. We'll see. I don't know how committed this team is to kind of like being willing to take team friendly deals in order to keep it together. I mean, Humphrey might be in a similar situation where you give him an extension to lower the overall cap hit.
Yep.
Give him, a solid contract, years. But yeah. It's not going to be like blowing the doors off. So I think that's probably where I'd go with at least one of them. Cause I think Humphrey's more the player you want to keep. And I agree, he could play safety for you. There are some, injury concerns potentially with both of them. They've both kind of gotten nicked up over their careers, played a lot of games for the Ravens. So we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, then there's going to have to be some decisions made when it comes to these players with the big cap numbers.
All right. I think we've gone through what we can in this part of the show. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about pass rush, some individual performances, and go through that. Gabe, tell folks where they can contact you if they want to talk football with you online.
Yeah, best place to find me is either on Twitter at Gabe Fergie, or I'm also on Blue Sky at Gabe Fergie. Still posting mostly on Twitter. I think there's just a little bit more of an audience there, but we'll see how things go. Maybe next year Blue Sky will be where I'm at more often, as that kind of the Ravens flock grows over there. I see more people joining in the conversation. So I think both are still good forums for talking about Ravens football, though.
All right. Hopefully it won't be TikTok, because I've heard there's some bad things with that. So anyway,
I have not ventured into TikTok land, and I guess I won't be.
I haven't either. I'm out. Not my kind of place, I'm afraid. All right. Other folks out there, we're into off-season content now, so I'm open on all short ideas. I want to all call, all points bulletin on that I want to hear that. One of the things I am going to have is positional reviews coming up over the next couple of weeks. I'll probably have people in mind for that, but I'd love to hear your ideas and thoughts about how the organizations, what changes you think might be necessary. I'll have probably some historical topic I do this off-season, which I'll be lining people up for, and of course, look for all the draft content and the expectations series, which will be coming sooner than you think in June. Probably we'll start that and heading into camp, and then the camp reports that'll come out. But a long off season, lots of content planned. Stick with it. If you will, really appreciate the listens this year. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, please. And any other things you can do to introduce this program to another person, I always appreciate. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store.
Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.